gentlemen, hello, what is up? Welcome to another episode of Inside the Game, episode 86 on October 8, 2013. We're back to our real form. Inside the EG is in control, sheds that liquid tad, and back with the good guys. Welcome back, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome back. What's up, guys? We are missing a suppy. Suppy actually was kidnapped the other evening. I don't know if you guys have heard. There's an Amber Alert out, actually.
Some milk cartons.
We too. Don't know. After Xenocider, beat Suppy at WCG or, prevented him from winning, we didn't hear from him after that. So I don't know if we'll have updates throughout the show or what. But
the good news is that now Lebo can share a completely unbiased story of their games and
yes,
his WCG experience.
That's true. That's true. Now, does this mean that Lebo gets one of these special TL ribbons anywhere?
They don't have them for WCG champions, I don't think.
Yeah, I seem to recall you having a WCG thing at one point on Team Liquid. No, never? No.
I have a star, and I won a Liquibet season, so those are my two swags on Team Liquid.
Okay. All
right. And the stars were being like a... They used to give those out for...
just being cool.
Being a good poster, yeah.
Yeah, being cool, like you are. All right. All right, gentlemen, Xenocider, you did have a victory this weekend, man. Congratulations, dude.
Yeah, thanks. I've never, really won anything before, and I never actually come back from, losses in series. Like, if I go down 0-1, that's pretty much it, usually. But I talked to Jaydong. Me and Alex Garfield arranged a meeting with Jaydong to talk about my mentality and how I need to stay confident and stuff like that. I feel like it really helped out, because versus Suppy, game one, I lost to something really stupid. I missed my supply depot wall, and I came back, and I won the next two games. And then versus Puck, I won the first series pretty easily, 2-0. But in the grand finals, he came back, beat Suppy, and then so we played in the grand finals, and he took the first series 2-0. And then he took the first game of the deciding series. So I...
Wow.
Yeah, that entire time I was just like, "Oh man, it's happening again. I'm choking." But then I remembered what Jaydong told me, and I just prevailed and won, I guess.
Nice. So you think that actually that helped you in this win?
Oh yeah, definitely. You really have to have confidence in your play. So half of it is mentality, half of it is skill, and I don't know. I have never played where I have a best of three advantage coming from the winner's bracket, so I didn't really take the first best of three seriously, to be honest. I was kind of just like, if I don't lose it, if I lose this, it's not that big of a deal. But then I realized afterwards that was a huge mistake. So afterwards, I got kind of down, but I came back.
Let me ask you this, because prior to this, we had you were sort of looking for a victory. You have joined Evil Geniuses. That in itself says, you're a player that is recognized as having skill, and, we hope to see you flourish. And now you get your first victory. Now, we were kind of joking before the show, don't get a big head, you can't start acting this way after you. But in all seriousness, what does the victory actually feel like, since you've been looking for this, and this is your first one, and this is, genuine, and how I want to know how you felt when you won. And then B, do you feel like you are making decent steps as a student / pro gamer aspiring to move up in the ranks?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like as a student, I definitely have the ability to become a top foreigner. I don't feel like you need to go full-time to become a number one foreigner or a top foreigner, as long as you practice 100% efficiently and you have your mindset up to par. Ever since I moved to EU, I've seen a drastic increase in my skill, and I fixed a lot of issues with my mentality. I basically realized that, if there is a slight imbalance that exists, which in Heart of the Swarm there really isn't, then the negative mentality that comes with that is, will actually hurt me more than the slight imbalance itself, like, if that makes sense. So I fixed my mentality, and I feel like that really helped me make steps, because then I just kept improving and improving, and I guess before, like, 1 year ago, or maybe even 6 months ago, I don't ever think I would be able to beat, like, Subby and Puck in a tournament like this, but now I feel like I've made big strides, and I will continue making them.
Right on.
That's awesome, because you're heading off to, I know they touched on this a little bit, but IEF, and this qualifies you for a trip to China, if I'm not mistaken, as well, right?
Yep.
So what?
You've got some international traveling ahead of you.
Yeah.
And that's like soon?
I think the WCG is in like a month and like a half. So
what about IEF?
IEF is, I'm leaving tomorrow, or technically tonight at like 5 a.m.
Okay.
Technically not tonight, then.
where is this on?
No, it's like no coverage on.
Yeah, like, okay. So a lot of, we'd be playing a lot of Korean players?
Yep, pretty much.
IEF 2013. Like, I can't believe I can't find. I find, like, all this 2012 stuff.
It was great in 2012.
5 years, 11 weeks ago, which shows us that IEF has legs. And that was for Moon, Soccer, Lin, and Ceceria. They took the Warcraft 3 spot, so, not
Chinese
quite
tradition,
up
dude.
To date, apparently.
Oh, wait. Moon's not Chinese.
Yeah, he's Korean, man. He was loved by the Chinese, though. He could have been Chinese in his honor. He could have been. Gentlemen in Control, we'll talk more about this in a bit. I'm going to try to find a link if I can. But Gentlemen in Control.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. I got in last night back from Germany at about 11:30 p.m. or something like that. But the kind of cool thing when you just get back from a trip like that is I'm not quite tired just yet because my body has no fucking idea what time it is. So
right.
I feel good.
Nice. And how was your flight? I saw that tweet that said, we'll be leaving as soon as we find the captain. I take it since you're here, they found the captain.
Yes. It was one of those things where, like, I'm actually really lucky with travel. I don't really get that many canceled flights. I don't get that kind of crap horror stories that you see other people get. I've been through it before, but, like, once or twice, whereas other people can't fly without these terrible stories. But on this trip, I'm dead dog tired. I want to go home. And on the first flight, it was delayed 2 hours. But fortunately, I actually had a layover, so it kind of absorbed that time. So I get into New York, rush to the gate, get on the plane, and I'm, like, still sweating, still breathing heavily. But I'm like, all right, you're heading home, Jeff. And then we're just kind of sitting there for a while. And then they're like, the co-pilot comes, like, hey, we're still looking for the captain, so we'll be here for a little while. And
way,
just sit tight. And
AC's
like,
busted and the toilet's backed up, so we're going to ask you to refrain from either of them.
Yeah, I was all good, but it was just, they worded it really funny. They're just like, we're looking for the captain. Like he's like hiding in the plane, like, you'll have to find me before we take off. But it ended up just being that there was accidents and traffic in New York, so he was just a little bit late. It was fine. Read my book, watched the movies, landed, and here I am.
We found the pilot's corpse in the cargo bay. We're going to have to sign a new pilot to the scene. Well, I'm glad that you've made it home. Another tip. You're at the studios, right? You have never been to those studios before.
No. The only time I've been to Germany was for Krefeld for a Homestory Cup.
Okay. So how was your trip to Germany? We'll talk a little bit more about WCS later, but how was your trip to Germany? I'd love to hear about the ESL studios just because...
Yeah,
they've definitely knocked it out of the park for WCS this year.
I think kind of the crazy thing that I'm learning time and time again, like when I went to the Good Studio in Sweden, is that stream, their studio, if you will, it of course doesn't look amazing on stream, but it looks really nice. It looks very crisp. But then when you're there, it's like cardboard pictures that are duct taped to a wall and then just a flimsy IKEA desk, you know, like it's very bare bones. But it looks really nice on stream. And I had a kind of similar experience with ESL where when I watch their stream, because they do such a good job of, like, here's Red Eye in front of the audience, there's the caster booth, there's the players, here's the social media desk, it gives you this illusion that it's this gigantic place and there's all these people there and it's a very expansive place, but it's really not. It's actually pretty, it's pretty condensed. I couldn't give you like square footage or anything like that, but pretty small, but big enough to fit, you know, 30 people along that wall coming in and watching. So that was a little bit interesting. But like you said, they've been knocking it out of the park all season long. And I felt it. I worked with these guys. They were wonderful. You know, Oliver, the producer that was working with me, I was nervous because anytime people talk in my ear, I'm not of the level quite yet where they can talk and I can talk and it looks fine. Whenever I'm whenever I'm hosting or commentating and someone starts talking in my ear, you'll see me go like, and then, yeah,
the fucking
yeah, okay,
Wookie,
sure.
Wookie roar.
Yeah, I just can't do it. But he did a great job of saying it at the right time and just working with me on that.
It's a good, it's a good producer, good director right there.
And then, of course, just being a part of that show, they just there's not much more I can say than what I have said. It was just a really positive, awesome experience.
Fantastic. All right, I'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
In a bit. So we got a few things chat about here this week on Inside the Game. Probably have plenty of time for some open phones, some updates on WCS. But first, I actually want to talk a little bit about something that came up on Reddit, and it was talking about Bisou's take in 6 days of streaming. Mm-hmm. And it linked to this Korean site where it was talking about, you know, or, well, the headline says 6 days of streaming, $9,300. And, you know, I found this very interesting because, of course, as you know, working for Twitch, I keep up to date with a lot of the streaming technologies and mm-hmm. sort of that industry. And I think this introduces an interesting discussion because Bisou, who is streaming on Africa, which is a Korean service, they have a very specific and different method of monetization. That is different than, you know, what we traditionally in U.S. and Europe have sort of grown up with Twitch. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Africa was actually started in 2006. Like, this was back in the, you know, in the what for us would be the Stick'em days before there was even Ustream or Justin TV. And they created this monetization method. Now, are either of you guys familiar with how Africa monetizes?
You buy balloons, like donations. They're kind of like it's kind of like how Dota 2 does it, where you buy banners and that money goes to the streamer.
Yeah, like you buy badges, like gifts that you give to the streamer, then the streamer like basically converts them into money. So you know you can be like, oh, Jeff, I love you. Here's mm-hmm. 1,000 balloons, and they're red, your favorite color. And then you can, you know, turn that into, you can, like, display them up on the screen. Anyway, I mean, this has been, like, a very, very popular thing. In fact, on Live on 3, we had Tabe on, who is a League of Legends player, who actually said that in China, he wants to retire so that he can do, you know, similar stuff. Because they have different, you know, not exactly the same thing, but different forms of monetization that we really haven't latched onto in mm-hmm. EU or Europe, so or in US. So what I really wanted to talk about was I was curious of A, whether or not you think a system like this would work in EU and US, and B, just like your thoughts on it in general. Because I got to be honest with you, like there's a part with me that's like that's batshit insane, and I think that mm-hmm. might have a lot more cultural sort of connection than, you know, than we might realize. But at the same time, like, always have felt like Twitch has a very connected audience streamer environment. So I just wanted to hear, you guys are players, you guys are streamers, you interact with your fans a lot. Is this, like, one of these crazy things? Do you even think it could work in sort of the atmosphere that is esports?
There's a few things to talk. I feel like we almost have to zero in on what's actually happening. Like, he's made a buttload of money, and I think it was like 6 days of streaming. But it's very, very much so, like we talk about like monetization, yes, but it's also just basically a PayPal donate button. Like, it's just saying, hey, if you like me and you like what I'm doing, send some money. Like, there's no, you have to send this amount, or if you've watched for X amount of time, this amount of money is required to go on. There's nothing like that. It's all free will. It's whatever, you know. So anytime you have that going on, like it's not so different from Twitch because, yeah, you make money on Twitch from streaming and you know, running ads and stuff like that, which is, I guess, different from the Africa experience. There's also streamers, all kinds of streamers that have all kinds of text everywhere saying, hey, hit that tip jar or donate button and help support me in that way. So that's where I think it's pretty similar. But you raise an interesting question because a lot of people are very... Money actually in esports is interesting because nobody hears how much a player makes in general from anything, right? So when this comes out, they're like, oh my God, do players make this kind of money from donations? And the answer is obviously, hopefully it's obvious, very much so, no. Bisou is actually one of the absolute most famous players ever. And even that being said, to get closer to your question, $9,000 in 6 days is ridiculous. It's awesome. Tip of the hat to everyone that felt that need to support him. That's so cool. You know, he didn't have the passion and the love for StarCraft II, so we went back to Brood War, and there's still people that really like Brood War. Tens of thousands of people tuned in. That's all awesome. But we have very much so, it should be put out there that no, it's not sustainable, depending on what your goal is. He's not going to make $9,000 every week. And if people are like, well, you don't need to make $9,000. What if he made half that every week? He's not going to make half that every week. This was the explosion of, oh my God, let's support Bisou. He just came over. That's so awesome. And then every single week, it's going to go down tremendously. The next time he does this, I'd be surprised if he broke 2,000 or 3,000, which is still really good. Don't get me wrong. But those numbers will plummet as time goes on, and he'll be making pretty similar money to what Twitch people would make every week, which is still going to be $300, $400, $500, which is really nice, but it's not $9,000. So I think a good example of this, too, would be even someone like Day9, who people forget, but like 3 years ago, he came out and said, look, I'm going to have my income be donation-based, and then the money I make from events, I will use that money to turn around and run events of my own to feed back into the community. That hasn't been discussed for a while because that wasn't sustainable. Day9 got tons of money from donations earlier on, and I'm sure to this day, there's still people that feel the need to support him and do that, but it's not the amount of money he would need to run Day9 TV, which has paid employees, right? That's not what's happening. And that's because people don't, this isn't like a tithe. They don't like look at their paycheck and go, well, I gotta take off 10% for Day9 TV this month. They'll do it whenever, you know, they'll do it when he reminds them, when he comes out and says, hey, I got this cool project I want to do. I need donations. Boom, $10,000. I guarantee it. But without those kind of reminders and advertisement and pushing, which also really kind of cuts into your capital, your political ability to do that, because you can't ask for donations all the time because people will start to regard you as a beggar. It's just not sustainable.
You know, what do you think? Do you have any thoughts at all about it?
Africa takes 30% of the donations, so I literally feel that it's better to just have like a PayPal in your stream link and then just ask for people to gift it to you. But I guess the balloons thing is a creative idea for people to come in. I just kind of like reiterate.
Is it a cultural thing? Like, I mean, can you imagine, you know, like someone in chat going, I'm going to buy you some balloons, you know, Snyder, because I like, you know, like it's like, it just seems like a different environment. Do you think like the culture? I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I guess I think in China and Korea, like, they created this culture early of this, like, broadcast jockey. They have guys that just play music and that sort of thing. And that sort of created an ecosystem. Do you think that same ecosystem can exist?
I'm not really sure what you're asking. But I do know that in Asian cultures, they do really like to buy like really small microtransactions, and some of them like get really addicted to it. Like in Korea, especially, like there are laws being passed and bans being issued on stuff like League of Legends because people literally can't hold back on paying like $5 for like their skins for their champions or whatever.
Take all of my money. I got problems.
These gimmicks actually do really work in Asian cultures.
StarCraft 2, and not even StarCraft 2, StarCraft, because it's been around for so long, and it began as this, like, not grassroots, but, like, very much so, we're cool, underground, you know, especially outside of Korea, but even inside Korea, like, the players were regarded as legends. So you supported them. You felt the need to like take care of them and to honor them because they provide you with so much entertainment. But also, you regarded them much like I would an NFL football player. Like I look at them and I'm like, wow, you're one of the perfect human beings. Like you do things I could only dream about. So I honor you. So that's why donations and that's why people have voted with their wallets so often in StarCraft, whereas in other games they haven't as much. It's because people have from the very beginning been raised up on the idea that like either you do it because you honor and respect them as demigods, or you do it because they need it, because there's nothing else that's happening. And right now that feeling is like a perfect storm in Brood War, where it's like the game is dead in right. The sense that, yes, there's this like privately ran league that Sonic does. It's really cool. People tune in. But it's not getting picked up by major, sponsors and stuff like that. Like, it's very much so fueled by the passion and love of the people around it as opposed to the corporate side of things. Sure. But then that's not fair to speak to them that way, but a lot of the people that are watching this are also watching because they spent 10 years of their teens watching Brood War. And now that there finally is these big-name pros getting back into it and giving it attention, it's like the perfect storm of I honor them, but also I need to support this because this is a cool form of entertainment that if I don't support, it will just go away. If Bisou turns on a stream and 150 people tune in, that guy's done in a week. It's like, fuck that. I got to get on with my life. Maybe he still does it and plays, but he definitely does other things because that's not going to be how he's going to raise himself up because he can't make money that way. So that's why it's all happening this way. And I think it's cool. And, I think it's an interesting phenomena, but it is a funny discussion on Team Liquid too. Not that we need to steer this in that direction, but there was actually people talking about how Brood War is more popular than StarCraft II now, and it's like the second coming, it's the golden age, like really weird stuff that you read on the internet where you're like, there's actually that guy then pays taxes or like drives his kids to work or school, and I'm scared now.
All right, any final thoughts? On this.
I just think it's cool. I think it's cool that there's enough people interested in this stuff that you could do that. Like I was, if you would have asked me 6 months ago if anyone was going to be watching Brood War, I would say like no, of course not. It's just completely gone. But no, there's thousands of people that still love to watch and it's still there, and that's awesome.
They will keep it alive.
Keep it alive, man.
For balloons. All right, let's talk about the balance map that was published a few days ago, right? It was like how many days ago?
Yep. Yeah. October 2nd.
Yeah. Gosh, wasn't that last show?
It was the day after last show.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I was gonna say. I was pretty sure we didn't cover this. We covered what they were potentially going to change, but now they've actually published the actual map. Now, we've talked before on the show where we don't necessarily, you guys have stated, hey, I don't go out of my way to like play 1,000 games on these maps, but I still like to discuss what went through, as some of them, we have talked about many, many times. But for Protoss, the Oracle changes went through as far as the movement speed increase, the acceleration, and the Revelation casting radius. So the gas change didn't go through. And these went through instead, which I think we knew was going to happen. And I'll just go through them all real quick, and then we'll talk about any of them. For Terran, obviously, they did add the upgrades. We'll talk about that for a while. And then that siege attack did go through with the same values, as well as the Widowmine splash damage radius. And then finally, the Roach Warren is going to have increased Roach movement speed. So they kept some Wild stuff. Burrow. What's that?
Wild Burrow,
yeah. No, we've added another speed roach upgrade. It's going to be great. Speed 2. We've got some changes, some that didn't change at all, some that were slightly changed. If these went in tomorrow, how would you guys feel about them? Xenocide, I'll start with you.
Did you read DeMuslim's blog, by the way?
I didn't. The one that was the state of StarCraft 2?
Yeah.
No,
well, that's what the title of it was. It barely was about the state of StarCraft 2. Yeah, it was more about the state of streaming while trying to be competitive.
I see. Go ahead.
Also, he talked about like the quote-unquote volatility of StarCraft 2 or something like that, like how it's not as like stable as Brood War was and like something like that. But essentially, I feel like a problem, and I don't really don't want to throw anybody on the bus here, but I feel like a problem that most any Terrans have is that the play just isn't really solid enough. So some Terrans might look at this Oracle change and be like, oh man, Oracles were already doing crazy damage. But I actually think in reality, like, this Oracle change is pretty nice. It gives Protoss a little bit more harass option. And I don't feel like it makes Proxy Oracle or anything too strong, and I don't feel like it makes Oracles in the mid game too strong, but when Demuslim kind of talked about how, like, there's just too many options in StarCraft 2, and there's, like, no way you can prepare for all of them, and, like, 1/5 of the games end up in coin flips, I don't actually think that's true. Demuslim has been known for quite a while to not scout as well, and maybe play a little bit greedier than he should be, which results in some games not going his way and it being out of his control. So that's one thing, I guess.
Okay. What anything?
Very confusing answer, Lebo. Very confusing.
I wanted to like. I don't know. I feel like I talked to you about the other changes already, but the Oracle change, it just made me think because like I read the Terran chat a lot, or the Terran chat we have going on, and it just seems that a lot of Terran players like feel that the Protoss has too many options, but in reality, if you execute your build properly and just scout properly and don't play too greedy, then these things like don't drain away your hope of winning, I guess.
What about the stream? Well, okay, wait. Let me start back. Anything to say about the Terran side?
I think we pretty much covered it pretty well.
Okay. Yeah, we did talk a lot about that. Confusing answers aside, in control, this comes out tomorrow. How do you feel about it?
I don't think the Oracle one really accomplishes that much. Like, there's no Protoss out there that aren't doing proxy Oracles or aren't using Oracles because they're too hard to control. So certainly this change will allow us to, you know, keep that extra Oracle around a little bit longer, be a little bit more cutting edge in the harass, that kind of a thing. But the Oracle's kind of always been a unit where it's like, you're either prepared for it or you're not. And if you're not prepared for it, you're going to take a lot of damage. If you are prepared for it, you're going to take less damage. So this kind of decreases that second thing where it's like, if you are prepared for it now, there's a chance that you still take a little bit more damage, which is interesting. But what they were talking about is trying to see the Oracle make more appearances in the late game, and this does not accomplish that at all. So I'm not super excited about it. It'll be nice. You know, like I said, certainly every Protoss has had that moment where, like, they tried to get the Oracle to start getting out of harm's way, but because it has kind of a weird acceleration time, the Marines shot it down anyways, but whatever. The problem I have is that if this were... Like, I like a lot of the Terran changes. In fact, I'm pretty okay with all the Terran changes. But if this went in tomorrow, I think, and I hope the map reveals this, the burrow movement speed for roaches is absolutely outrageous. Like, moving as fast as unstimmed bio is is like... I mean, that just negates force fields altogether, and don't even get me started on, like, are force fields a good or bad thing? That doesn't enter into this conversation because they're necessary as it is. Like, Protoss is shit against Zerg without force fields, so by doing this, you're encouraging Zerg to make one of the more boring units, and you're encouraging Protoss to hard counter something that is really boring. So I don't think it's good for the game in any regard, for Zerg or for Protoss. And I'd be very interested to see strong arguments again, you know, for it. When we discussed this in the past, Suppy pretty much agreed with me, so I'm still waiting for that Zerg out there that says this is great.
Yeah, I think he did kind of have your back on there. I'll gladly be the Zerg that says I think it's great, but I mean, I know that doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
So. But if it makes you feel...
We can easily ignore that, you know what I mean?
If it makes you feel any better, Jeff, I'll be that guy. For
okay.
The map's up. There, I was hoping that video I was just showing was actually going to show us the balance differences because those videos are always nice. But it was actually more a how you can go and play that. So if you're interested, it's over on Battle.net. And by the way, for anyone who is confused, it was a hypothetical question. If this comes out tomorrow, what are your thoughts? It's not actually coming out tomorrow.
Right.
Now I want to circle back to this blog, Xenocider, that you were talking about because. Demuslim was talking about streaming and being competitive at the same time. Can you like give me the rundown? Was he saying that it was bad? It was like not helping him or
I think he said that it wasn't like possible that or something to stream and be competitive. Like he hasn't been streaming as much and he's been removing the VODs and stuff like that.
So yeah, he's talking about how if you have hundreds of hours of your gameplay up, and it's one of the, his stream for a while was the most popular stream in StarCraft 2.
Right.
People just had way too good information on him. And I think it's an interesting and valid discussion to be had because, like Lebo said, he plays really greedy and he doesn't really scout. And those are choices and strategies and, you know, part of your overall gameplay that aren't necessarily not viable. But if someone knows that you play greedy and knows that you don't scout,
right,
then all of a sudden it doesn't become viable. You do have to mix in some different kind of play. So certainly that's on the Muslim side. That's where, like, I don't break out the violin and cheese while I read his blog because I would argue with him that he has just as much accountability to all the things he's complaining about as everyone else does. But it does enter in the interesting discussion that we are supposed to stream. And when we do stream, we don't want to, like, we don't want to dick around because that hurts your viewership too. People want to watch you play your best and they want to watch you beat really good players. That's when your stream numbers go the highest. So if you're going to stream and you want to make money from doing it and you want it to be worthwhile, then you are showing your gameplay. But on the flip side, if you then want to turn around and be a successful pro gamer, that's harder to do while streaming because then it gives free information out to people. So it's a tough balance. And I think actually coming off the Brood War subject, one of the things to go back to is that back in the day, not only was there not streaming, but it was like a golden goose egg if you ever found a JDong replay. Like, right, it should be released months after that tournament, not right after, almost never. And if it was, sometimes that was like you know, meeting at the docks at the 11th hour with like your jacket pulled up and stuff like that. Like, I remember when Rhett was over there, one of the things he was accused of was leaking replays of the pro gamers out to the community.
Yeah, because Kespa tried to keep a really strong hold on that, right?
Yeah. So they took it crazy serious. And that's because those were the top notch, creating strategies that they wanted to keep secret until they unveiled them so that they would be most successful. So that part of what the Muslim's talking about is very interesting and very much so worthwhile discussing. But I agree with Lebo. Like, a lot of what DeMuslim was saying is, like, the game's too volatile and Protoss has too many options, so it's too hard. It's like, no. There's Terrans out there that are doing fantastically well. I think there's 8 of the top 13 in WCS are Terran right now. Like, and then you look at the ladders and you say there's not a lot of Terrans there. I mean, there's arguments. There's always going to be – we've done this debate forever, but I think even DeMuslim would tell you he's not playing perfect StarCraft 2 and still losing.
Right. We've talked about the whole streaming and giving up strats, and we talked about, I remember when we originally talked about it on Inside the Game, and we kind of all chuckled a little bit because it was more like, well, wouldn't it be great if it got to that point? And there have been a lot more interviews on Live on 3 and champions who have come out and said, like, I studied the shit out of my opponent. And you know, this whole concept of streaming and not only practice, but just, you know, all the tournaments that are available and open. One of my favorite examples is actually, if you guys know, a Korean Street Fighter player goes by the name Infiltration. Like, he said he would just watch tape like it was boxing. You know, that you could learn so much from just watching the little tiny things that your opponent didn't handle well or what. So, it's not surprising that more people, I guess, are being more aware and conscious of this. And someone in chat mentioned, well, what about the Tejaway, where sometimes he'll like off race and then he'll just like stream randomly and stuff. And I would say that, like, anytime someone could watch 3 or 4 of your games, they could actually pick up a ridiculous amount of information. Now, probably couldn't watch someone from like 10 years ago and get the same information, or, you know, 10 months ago and get the same information because the game changes. But I do think that there's a lot you can find out about a player by just seeing that much. So I don't know. Xenocider, why don't you chime in here a little bit? Have you ever thought about this? Have you ever studied someone's stream or tape that you know you have to play because you know they have a lot of content out there?
Actually, Suppy, his first round in WCS, where he played Puck, he was streaming pretty often, and he had the VODs up. And afterwards, Puck literally just completely wrecked him with some completely fine-tuned strategies. And then afterwards, in the Reddit thread discussing the match, I think, Puck posted, like, it wouldn't have been nearly as easy if you didn't post your VODs online. And even if you don't post your VODs online, I know when the Ognis used to play, and I know most people don't do this, but it's an option. He actually live recorded his opponent's streams. So even if they didn't save the VODs, he would still be able to analyze their play.
Sneaky.
I mean, so, I've said this for a while. Like, if your number one primary function is to be the absolute best StarCraft II player you can, like a Nanua, like a Scarlet, and then you shouldn't be doing any of that. You shouldn't be streaming. You should not be... you shouldn't be on shows. You shouldn't do those things. You just play, and you do customs and ladder, and you work on the game, and you do those things that Lebo's talking about, where you go study your opponents. There's so much content out there. Even if they're not streaming, go to their previous tournaments, look at their builds, look at what they did on maps. You can get so much information on everybody. But the kind of stress on the non-Koreans is that if you do that, you run the risk of fading away into obscurity, because right. Winning in StarCraft 2 is so hard. Even someone like I just named Nanua and Scarlet, they're the absolute best. But after that, who do I name that's doing really well? I don't know. You can make a case for a few names, and then I would tell you that they probably streamed or they're on a high-powered team that does some content for them. But not everyone's so fortunate to be on a high-powered team that does content for them to keep them relevant when they're not winning. Or to make it sound like, you know, a lesser accomplishment is a bigger one because of what they went through. If you don't have someone churning out that information for you, it's so hard. So this has been a really stressful, hard thing to talk about, because the natural inclination for all of us foreigners is like to get down on the person that doesn't just focus on only practicing and be like, you shouldn't be streaming and shame on you. But that guy's got bills to pay and that guy's got a future to craft. And if you only do it through winning, it's an incredibly difficult and nearly impossible path. Whereas if you focus too much on streaming and you kind of just completely sacrifice your pro gaming career, that too has its costs as well. Like you need to do that, but then you also have to be a personality, because just playing the game on a stream isn't enough.
Right?
How many times do we see that? A really good player who doesn't say anything and sits there and gets 500 viewers, which is great by a lot of standards, but for sustainability, nope, that's not enough. Right. You will not make shit money from that. Well, you will make shit money from that, is what I'm saying. So it's a very tough balance to strike, but I feel like with someone like a Suppy or like a DeMuslim who has evil geniuses to back up their careers with articles, with interviews, with the things that they could do, then maybe that streaming time does start to look more like a Hero or Tasia stream where... he two raxes for 5 hours. You know, he fucking he does play Zerg and Protoss, and yes, the viewership gets hit pretty hard. And then he announces like immediately after tournament, I'm going to stream for real for this week, and then the viewership comes back. Like, you'll have to do things like that, but you will have to stream less. You will have to focus on practice if your goal is to win, because streaming does hurt you, and there's nobody out there that should say otherwise.
Awesome. Alright, guys, thanks for your comments. It's good. Let's talk about WCS now, moving on to what In Control was just recently hosting, WCS EU, which is the first Season 3 to complete, or Season 3 segment, I guess, to complete. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, I did not get to see as many games on Saturday as I saw on Sunday. Jeff was taking the role of Red Eye, as Red Eye, I think, had a wedding that he had to go to.
Yep, sister's wedding.
So let's talk a little bit about WCS EU. I kick things off, and I know I sound like a broken record. There was even a Reddit thread that was just like, congratulations to these guys, they've killed it. But ESL and what they've done with their studio and their ongoing coverage and the people involved, it's just all great. It's just kind of, people talk about having comfort food. I feel like ESL is always a comfort stream for me. I can always turn it on, and I know what I'm going to get, and it's really good, and the production value is good and consistent. So they really did a fantastic job. Being there, Jeff, Tell us how it was. How was the energy like? Was it interesting during the round of eight with obviously Targa, Vortex, and Nurcio being involved there in the studios? How'd that go?
You know, it was pretty interesting to experience firsthand because my experience before this was mostly with DreamHack, where time in and time again they get super lucky with games and matchups. It's like Jadong versus someone interesting, or Sho has the series of his life and he beats life, and like these ridiculous things that give such good story and feel to the tournament. It, as good as DreamHack and lucky as they were in this regard, that's how unlucky ESL was with their WCS Season 3 finals. Like, right. It was one of the most one-sided tournaments I've ever witnessed in my entire life. Like, there was one 3-2, and there was one 3-1, and then the rest were 3-0. And even the 3-2 and 3-1s were, like, very one-sided in all of the games. So it was kind of... We were kind of laughing about it in the background, but at the same time rolling our eyes and sad because, you know, when you have a big production, big tournament like this, what you want is severe drama and excellent games. And MC kind of did that in the last one,
yeah.
But it was only after he was down 0-3 and he proxy oracled his way to two wins and then almost a third win, which was like as close as we got to being interesting. But outside of that, game-wise, it was just a manhandling. And it's not even like I look at the foreigners and blame them because the Koreans manhandled each other as well. I mean,
yeah, they did.
Stardust got absolutely destroyed. MMA was killing everybody until that... Well, he played two European Zergs, but it just wasn't a great tournament in terms of games.
Yeah, I watched the finals. Pretty much, it was just completely based on what All In MC wanted to do, and like if it worked, like then it did. Like, but there was no back-and-forth action, really. It was just like it worked or it didn't. Mm. And that was pretty much it.
As far as the production you're talking about, which is really cool, is they do such a good job with their production, but what I like about it is that they've invested in this and they worked towards it and they made it possible. They built this awesome studio where they maximize, like we were talking about, they kind of maximize little space into lots of quality. They brought in Apollo, they brought in Kalaris. These are two very, very good. Of course, Apollo is like one of the absolute best commentators you can have. They have Red Eye. They brought him in as well. Like, people don't necessarily know this, but at the beginning of the year, Red Eye was not full-time ESL TV. They hired him and moved him to Germany. They invested in these things. And they have a great production staff, but of course they get daily content all the time to work on and to practice. So it's all going up and up, but it's because they put in the elbow grease and they worked at it.
Sure.
And I like that story. I like that WCS, which is kind of this grizzly bear that a lot of people struggle to deal with, WCS Europe it's become a super big positive. Like, I don't look at their stream and ever go, ah, what a big mistake that was. It's just strong, consistent, and great. And I saw it working with them. They have several producers. They work with their talent. They don't force anything on their talent. They're not like, here's how you do it. Like, for me personally, they were very much so like, hey, how do you want to do this? And they actually came to me 3 or 4 times and were like, what can we improve upon? What did you not like and what did you like? And I was like, I'm sorry to be so cliche, but everything you did's great. I don't have anything to ask. And it was awesome. And like I said, it sucks the games didn't follow it up, but
right.
I don't really have any super... Like, they fed us. They,
bitch, please.
Yeah, that was funny. Got to move around. I want to give a giant tip of the hat to ESL and Carmack for the idea to do those player intro videos. And not to do just one, but actually several so that they could show them at different stages. But there was some like really cool information coming out about like MC talking about how he had lost motivation, MMA talking about how like winning BlizzCon is one of the like biggest moments in his entire life that he'll tell his kids about. There were some damn near tearjerker moments in those interviews, and we don't get that kind of content from Koreans, but ESL was able to produce that and ask the right questions to get them to talk about it, and I think that goes a long way in the overall production. It was an amazing job.
So let me switch gears just a bit. Xenocider, a lot of people are saying MMA is back. He is back. We, you know, he's the MMA that, as strong as he was back when the Blue Flame Hellions were reigning the Terran throne, etc. What's your thoughts as a Terran on MMA, how he's looking right now, and how he could potentially do moving forward, now looking to be in at least tournament winning shape?
Okay, so MMA, I honestly, like, I really don't want to be too dickish. Basically, in the playoffs...
Anything you say now is dickish automatically. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
He played Nurcio, Vortex, MC, who basically kind of just all-ins every game. He's playing kind of in a relatively weak region. In this WCS specifically, he didn't really have any true tests, like no big Korean hitters. He didn't play like a single one. So I would have to wait until BlizzCon to say like MMA is truly back. Like the form he showed was true, but he played against not that good opponents basically.
Okay. So you would tell people to maybe don't buy that ticket for the train quite yet.
Yeah, pretty much.
Stick around a little bit.
I don't know. I agree. Obviously, didn't play anyone like a Flash Innovation, you know, like the big, big names. But I think it's a misconception to underrate Nurcio and Vortex and even the dangerous play of MC. These are guys who, they're not a threat to go win a GSL, but they're a threat to beat any one player. And MMA repelled them very easily and dominated them. And I think that is a pretty strong message, so... I don't look at this performance and say MMA going into Toronto is a favorite to win, but if MMA places lower than top six, I would be very surprised with his current form. He's playing really, really well. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily say that just after WCS Europe Finals. I say that after seeing the progression of where he's come from and where he is now and who he has beaten along the way. He's playing some seriously good StarCraft too. Like I might even say the best in his career relative to...
Yeah.
The people he's playing against, like back when he was really good, I thought there was fewer good players back then. Now there's a very dense and saturated scene of top-notch players, and he's still doing very well.
You would agree, though, Jeff, that this with Xena, that this was still just one step. This isn't there's a higher level that MMA has to defeat to really.
Absolutely,
okay.
Absolutely. I think of the WCS regions, Korea is the hardest, North America is the second, and Europe's the third. And I think that concept rubs a lot of people the wrong way because the North American WCS, if it was made up of actual North American players, would obviously be the third, the easiest WCS region. But because it's actually completely filled up with very much so extremely powerful Koreans, we almost had more North American Koreans in the finals placing higher than the Korean region in the last season two finals. I mean, that blows. That's crazy.
Yep.
Even now, you can see it in the chat. There's one guy just losing his mind. No,
and
he's
no not fucking second. Way. Right. It's like you know what? I'll gladly bring up the final groups for each. In fact, we don't have a whole lot to talk about for US. So let's just look at the remaining 16 players that are here. The hardest, we're looking at an almost all Korean pool. So, yes, I, like you, Jeff Robinson, would put NA second.
99% of people would. It's like that's part of the reason why with that kind of like I really feel like it is 99%. But the reason it's a talking point is because every time you mention this, every time. There is a decent number of people that are very butthurt because there's some strange pride that was established a while ago. And it's funny because we're talking about this. Like, look at this player list. Scarlett and Huck, as the two Canadians, are the only two non-Asian players. Yeah. Maxed and Sen are the two only non-Koreans of those Asians. So this is, like, completely Korean. But they're like, Europe's just better. Don't you get it? Like, I don't explain this. It's just better. But you look at this list, like, if I was like, all right, I'll tell you what. I'll drop off Pult, Tasia, Jadong, Hiro, and Hyun. I'll just like sprinkle them into the European region, just like fucking WCS fairy dust into that region. And they would double cleave, like just giant war axe, just hack their way through that entire thing. And then the five of them would decide who's going to be the order of the top. And there's actually, as I say that list, people are like,
your list is terrible. I would have put in instead Scarlet, and I would have put in Apocalypse is playing great. Really, not Apocalypse, nobody would say that, but like, you know, Sen's really underrated. Oz is, like, there's arguments to be had for who would butcher that region. And I'm not saying this to disrespect or hurt people in the European region. They have very good talent there, and I think MMA is going to do great, and the five they send are going to be cool. But it's bonkers to look at these two regions and think for even half a second that Europe is more difficult. It's just bonkers.
Yeah, it's been pretty tough in AM. And like I mentioned, I don't think this doesn't even begin till next week. So currently, Challenger games are being played right now. If I'm not mistaken, is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Right now.
And Suppy's about to play.
Yeah, I think it's after this game.
We found Suppy. He's going to play, and he's got to beat Juan Sin. Oh my God.
I think he has to beat Petraeus first.
Well, he does. He has to beat Petraeus first, and then he has to beat Juan. I was just seeing his big weakness in front of him.
But I think he can. I think he's like a favorite out of that bracket. I'm pretty sure he's going to beat Juan Sin. He said his EVP has been pretty good recently. So,
but that's not going to. We won't know the finalists for that one for the NA finals. Not till next week. Lastly would be Korea, and then I'll probably just go into some open phones. We have our final four, you guys. Dear Maru, Sulky, and Sue. We talked a little bit last week about what we thought would happen in this round of eight. Do you guys felt like it played out the way that we talked about, or did any of the results really surprise you?
Well,
what do you think, Zeno?
Protoss, probably not too good in tournaments. I every single time I'm like maybe this time, but some other race just seems to prevail. Just happened that way. What I'm actually more interested in is the placement matches. The way that Trap played versus Joshi, he brought like a really consistently new War Prism low Colossus style where he basically just like loads War Prism after War Prism of Templars. And then in the Korean metagame right now, it's really popular to get like early Ghosts and just SCV pull. But when you have the War Prism and the Templars inside it, it's impossible to EMP or snipe the Templar like right away before the Storm hits. So I feel like this was a really innovative way to essentially shut down Joshi entirely. Like he was pretty confused the entire series, so I thought that was really interesting.
As a Terran, do you think we'll see more and more of that type of play from Protosses at that level?
I don't know. Like Protoss just plays. Like, there's no golden standard for Protoss, usually. Like, some people copy, but, like, most of the people that play Protoss just prefer to make their own style. And sometimes it's based off of, like, pro-Korean players, but other times, like, even the top Korean players, like, have very distinctive play styles.
Jeff, what do you think about the results as they stood? Rain actually not being able to make it to WCS finals at BlizzCon either as a result of not making it through there.
Your thoughts? I'm more just stunned by the names. Unfortunately, you know, like kind of Rotterdam tweeted this when it happened, but it's sad to not see Rain go because he's still carrying that torch as like the Protoss to watch. But there's these young bucks like Trap and Deer that are.
Yeah,
kicking people around, man. They're winning. They're winning pretty important matches. So, I didn't actually get a chance to watch a lot of the games. I did read about them, which you know I'm not going to go on this. I'm not going to explain anything about after what I read. But what I have learned and what I've said in the past and inside the game is I'm learning more and more consistently that Korea is competitive. So I'm trying to not be as surprised by results because those guys are pretty neck and neck. There's nobody. Even Innovation, who I think people would still say is the best player in the world, he's been dropping sets, man. He's been losing because that's how good the players are.
If Maru takes back-to-back WCS Korea wins, I will be, like, very, very shocked. That would be completely bonkers, actually.
Well, Artosis predicted a Solki Maru finals. So will it be God. Sue versus
oh,
Deer
no.
in the
oh.
finals?
God rest the soul of those games. Huh?
Oh no.
Did you guys see Sue versus Parting?
I didn't see it.
Okay.
But it was a 3-0, right?
3-1.
It was a 3-1. And I think there was one game where it wasn't just Roach Ling pressure from Sue.
There was just one game that wasn't that?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Which was a... The other game was like a Quick Hive, Viper, Roach Hydra. But Parting just seemed kind of flustered in all of it. He had one map. I think it was the second map. It was that tied it up 1-1. Because if I'm not mistaken, Parting took game one. And then after that, I mean, he just had like a bad engagement in the middle. And he just seemed... You ever watch those players? You're like, you feel the tilt? I felt the
tilt. Yeah.
I felt the tilt.
Oh, yeah.
From Parting. Yeah. In that matchup. And I don't know if that had any effect on the placement matches. Trap, you know, was playing awesome, but I don't know. Sue's good, but Parting definitely did not look like the beast he's been in the past.
Yeah. That's too bad.
Yeah. He has stomped Parting before, you're right. All right, so when is the finals?
Toronto?
No, the finals for Korea. Or I'm sorry, I meant to say the semifinals. I'll look on that WCS.
Oh, it says right here, 9 hours from now, actually. 35 minutes.
Oh.
Oh, wow, really? Sick.
Tonight.
Team Liquid, man, they're my calendar.
Team Liquid. All right, well, I was looking on the BattleNet page. Oh, there we go, the schedule. It's right there. It's right there. It's playing an ad, though.
Son of a bitch.
You guys can't hear it, but I...
Don't you hate ads, Weed? Don't you just hate freaking ads?
You know what? I should install Adblock, but I'm not a douchebag! So I won't. No, I'm just kidding. I know that people have they have valid reasons for why they use Adblock. Porn sites.
Exactly.
Yes, you are right. There it is. Semifinals, both of them. Which means the finals is when. I don't know. Challenger.
I can look it up.
Not for
hit the more button here.
Not for
wait
a bit.
For it.
Wait for it.
Not for the next 6 days.
Not in at least the next six days.
All right. Semifinals tonight, though. That's the important information that you gotta know.
The unfortunate thing is that there will be a Meta episode before the finals, so
there could be another.
Buckle your seatbelts, ladies and gentlemen. Artosis has not yet finished shattering the dreams of young men and women around the world.
Now, before we move on and open up the phone lines, and of course, you're right, a moment of silence for all the hopes and dreams that he will shatter. I'd just like to actually respond to Goldsnake here. He says the ads hurts his eyes and ears. Let's talk about a time where we had three channels on television, no DVR, TiVo, or anything, and we had to watch ads. You know, I appreciate
we still have to, man.
You youngins,
I watch the Seahawks.
There you
There's
go.
Commercials all the time. It's really tough.
I know. Adblock might seem all nice and shiny, but man, when you come from my era where you had to watch ads, you start
back
to appreciate those ads and all the great things that they advertise to you. Anyway.
No, the way I always word it, because and I know we obviously could talk about this for weeks and have.
Let's do talk about it for
ads suck. Nobody likes ads. The funny ones are awesome, but they're very few and far between. But when you just kind of randomly, not necessarily randomly, when you just kind of leave Adblock on and block all of it indiscriminately, just like, I don't like ads at all, that does hurt the people that rely on those advertisements to then be able to make money. Like, that's just documented. It's out there. I'm not making this up. That's just what happens. So what I always say whenever I'm streaming or something like that, if people could, we all agree ads suck, but if you want to help support something that you like, do the nice thing and, you know, not ad block it. And then use your ad blocker for general, you know, whatever. That's what I always ask. But to each their own. Like, I used to get kind of mad at the concept because it sucks, and maybe there will come a time when they finally kill something that I don't like, or I do like, rather, and I'll get really upset, but for right now, I ask that people sacrifice that.
That's right.
I'll edit. I've never actually had an ad blocker on, and I swear to God.
Me too. I don't know. I'm that guy. It doesn't bother me that much.
Not that much. There are bad commercials, though. Like, that is the responsibility of, I feel like, the ones where, like, after the commercial is done running, your stream is frozen or broken.
That,
which those do
I
show
hate
up.
That shit, man.
I feel the rage of, like, every single traffic jam in the history of the United States. Like, I'm like, oh,
you know what?
My
you know,
God!
Jeff? Hey, actually, a shout out to the guys that actually report those ads so they can be removed, because there's been a few lately. So believe it, it makes a difference. If you go to help.twitch.tv and report an ad, like, they will get rid of it, you know? Like,
the smoker commercial, too, this guy. Good point.
Oh,
good
my God. Smoker commercials, dude.
Dude.
Those haven't been on for a while,
though. I watch streams, I'm eating food.
Dude,
and a
hey, listen.
I look up, there's...
They're like, hey, first off, I'm glad that they run those fucking commercials, to be totally honest. As
Does
an
it work?
Ex-smoker, well, no, I don't smoke anymore. So, but as an ex-smoker, I think that they are effective against smokers. And although all you non-smokers are probably like, it's fucked up and it's got... Realize that you're not necessarily the target audience for that.
That's
hopefully
true.
The only way you're going to be the target audience is when you're like, hey, Bobby, you're my best friend, man. I don't want you to end up like that chick that has to like put her face on every morning that I see on Twitch. So
literally
stop smoking.
I hope it does work, but
follow
I'll
DJ Wheat's e-cig guide and fucking get going good.
There's also those commercials about texting while driving, which is terrible. Like, it's not good to do that. But every once in a while, I still do text, even after watching the commercial of the guy sitting there. He's like, I hit a family of 17, and most of those were children, and I ran them right over. And then that's the whole commercial. So if that's the same for smoking, I don't know. Because when I watch that, I don't go, God. I actually start texting right away. I'm like, man, you won't believe this commercial I just saw. Like,
dude,
no, I don't.
You want to know, honestly, I have to, because I don't like to text and drive either. But I have to say, like, I am so very impressed with the voice, like, on Android and iOS devices. Like, it's pretty crazy. You can throw some shit at it, and you can dictate on a phone, like, on a phone.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I like dictate all the time. Like, you know, I just go.
No, not boner. Jeff loan her.
Bitch,
backspace.
Period.
Backspace.
New line. Zeno is a dork.
Aw.
Period. New line.
Did you do it?
Zeno needs Twitter followers. Dude, it's going to get all that. Jeff is a bitch. Period. Oh,
so
it
far,
says.
So good.
It said Zeno. It spelled it with a Z.
Oh.
Zeno is a dark, so it didn't quite get dork.
Well, I mean,
Zeno needs Twitter followers. Oh, you can't see it at all. It almost worked.
Yeah,
and then he hit send.
Good.
This is my public service announcement, you guys. Use that shit. It's really good. It's really good. Don't text
and drive. Smoke and don't text while driving.
That's right. That's right. Zeno is a dark. All right, let's open. The phone lines are open, actually. People were trying to call in before we could even take calls. So let me turn this on, take our first call. We've got Alex on the line. Hello, Alex, a big Suppy fan. Welcome to Inside the Game. All right. What's up? All
right. So, okay, sorry. So, my question, since you guys are talking about streams and stuff, this kind of has to do with that, and it kind of came up on the spot. But I think it's a pretty good question. With the streaming culture with StarCraft, it seems that people only want to watch the best players. And when you look at other games, I guess League of Legends, maybe, I don't really watch League that much, but they have more, like, fun streams. I know, like, you can always say Dragon and, like, Maximus Black and stuff, but, like, I think that's a very rare example. How come it's almost impossible to be, like, a fun streamer, like, maybe Diamond Masters? I guess you can maybe use Destiny as an example recently, where they just, like, have fun, they don't really take the game too seriously, and they, like, play like custom games a lot and like or custom games like I mean like arcade games. Is it just like art with our like StarCraft culture? Like I've been playing StarCraft for years now. I can understand. Like, I used to be like that, where I only want to watch someone Grandmaster top 10 and just want to watch him straight up ladder. Like, I don't even care if he's analyzing, because since I've been playing for so long, I kind of understand what's going on, obviously. But do you know what I'm asking, though? Like, how come we don't see, like, the fun streams like you do with other games?
Well, I think it's pretty straightforward. Like, think about your own experience. Like, let's say you're a soccer player. Would you watch a show or a broadcast of a high school soccer match as a grown man? Probably not, but you'd be like, well, no, maybe I would. Then yes, you would be the minority that then also does watch, like, a few of those streams you are talking about, like a Maximus Black, where it has appeal not for the level of play, but for other reasons. So it's fewer and far between. Most people would rather watch close to the pinnacle of play or some other X factor like entertainment or, you know, something they do like Destiny. Nobody watched Destiny's stream because he was the best. They watched because of his personality.
Exactly. And that's where I kind of want to say that the soccer example, like, I don't know if maybe I didn't explain it well enough. Like, I don't think soccer is a good example because it's soccer. But in StarCraft, there's a lot of different things you can do. Like, you can interact a lot with your viewers and play, like, arcade games your whole stream, which I know some, like, streamers do, like, have special days. But you don't see a dedicated streamer that's dedicated to just, like, having fun.
Yeah, let me jump in here. Like, let's actually look at a different game by comparison. And we won't even look at anything that's relevant now. Let's look at one of my favorite games to bring up on Inside the Game, Quake 3. Quake 3 had, you know, team deathmatch, 1v1, it had CTF, it had, you know, all these other mods and Action Quake and this and that and the other. But you know what, at the end of the day, it was pretty much either 1v1 or TDM. And that's just kind of what the community liked to watch, and that's what people like to play. And even though CTF was great and we loved to play it and it was fun, you couldn't just get as many people interested in it. And there was no real rhyme or reason why. It was just the community sort of dictated that. Now, if you relate that to StarCraft II, you know, one of my favorite arcade mods, which is like Star Strikers, which I think is fucking amazing and could be like a standalone game. You know, I don't know why it doesn't get as many viewers as like other StarCraft streams, but I can guess just because StarCraft has kind of grown to be about the 1v1, that watching another player just do battle versus another player. And sometimes people watch due to the skill, and other times, like in Control mentioned, they watch due to the personality.
That's a good point. It's more competitive-based viewership, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I understand. I was just, because recently I've just been exploring more into other streams, like just other games. And I noticed that people, like, a lot of other people just seem to have a lot more fun with their streams than I'm in a series. But I guess it is just, like, StarCraft is so competitive and people don't really play just for, I guess, just to have fun. Which is a weird thing to say, but people play to win and to learn. Like, that's just the honest truth.
Yeah. There are probably people that want to watch to learn. There's people that want to watch to be entertained. There's people probably just like to have StarCraft on in the background. And so, whichever stream mm-hmm. they hit, it's, you know, that's the one they go in. I mean, I think everyone, you look at everyone's viewing habits, and they're all different. Like, but here's the one thing. Let me just throw this out here, and then, Xena, if you have any thoughts on it. You know, I never thought in a million years AI players wrestling against each other would get popular.
Oh,
but,
my
like,
God.
Baza made that popular, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I do believe that someone can make anything popular. They just have to carry it and build that popularity. I don't believe any of that shit will ever happen overnight. But Xeno, any thoughts on this from your perspective?
So when I talk to my friends, a lot of them say that they watch StarCraft 2 for like the mechanics. You know, like you're playing fast, you're all that kind of stuff. Like it just something that you could never do. And they watch other games like Dota 2 and LOL for like the personality. And it's just like in StarCraft 2, it's really, really hard to consistently show your personality and like in a commentative way and just being really fun about it. Like, cause in StarCraft 2, you really do have to try really hard if you want to win. Like, you can't just like start joking around like 4 minutes in the game because then you miss a supply depot and you'd like die. So that's a pretty big part of StarCraft 2 streaming. And also, like, if you want to be a funny streamer, but like you're in Diamond League, you have to like already be established. Like you needed to have been like a Destiny like a long time ago. Like if you want to start a Diamond stream now, that's funny. Like what incentive would you have for like people to watch you? I mean, it's just the fact of the matter is that most people wouldn't ever give you a chance in the first place. So the established fun streamers that we have right now, which is like Destiny, Maximus Black, and Dragon, are like probably the only ones we're gonna have for ever, or until like Legacy of the Void or something.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I would expand more, but I wouldn't want to make the call too long.
Yep. Thanks for your call, Alex. We appreciate it.
Yeah, stay based, guys. Love you all.
Yep, peace.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. Let's take another one. Area code 253. Hello. Welcome. Got cold feet. Yeah. Walked us to the altar. Fucking ran out. Married our sister. Can't believe it.
Damn it.
What a dude that guy is. All right, I'll take another one. We got Mickey on the line. Hello, Mickey. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, DJ Wheat.
Yo.
Thank you for taking the call.
You're welcome.
Hello.
So people always talk about like how to improve the StarCraft scene like at a high school level. So all I'm going to ask is like if I can get some help, because I'm a part of an organization called the High School Star League, in which it involves League of Legends and Dota 2 also, but we also have a StarCraft 2 team in which high schools across the nation will compete against each other. And I'm just asking for help to like advertise this, get this out there, because the registration for the StarCraft 2 team signups is coming up. It's really soon, I think. And you can sign up at hsstarleague.com. So that's essentially what I wanted to just put out there.
I mean, you probably just did everything that we would be able to do right now. Like, I got to be honest with you, Mickey. Like, I would go about this all different. I don't know that calling into Inside the Game is the right way to get signups. Like, I would probably go out and try to get a massive listing. I'm sure it exists, of school districts, emails, their entire like ESU hives that you can probably email to try to get awareness and interest in the high schools, right? Because that's where you really have to be successful at, is the high. You have to get the kids that are in high school to know about this so that they can sign up. I think that probably the people who are already watching the show might already have an idea what this is. So, you know, just throwing it out there, like, I hope you guys are making those efforts too, because I think they'll go a long way.
Yeah, like, we're just trying to take, like, every avenue possible. Like, I just, like, why not give it a shot? Like, we're taking, like, every bit of way to try to advertise in all the ways.
Okay.
So, just thought that this could help. Like, it can't hurt, can it?
No, it can't hurt. It can't hurt. Thank you for calling up and informing the masses about it, man. Take care, Mickey.
M-I-C-K-E-Y.
M-O-U-S-E. All right. Area code 204. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, what's up, man? It's Michael from Canada.
What's up, Michael?
Give you a call.
Canada. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going well, man. You?
Good. It's going good. Going good.
Yeah, I'm just wanting to talk about a lot of the Let's Plays. When I log in and I watch, a lot of them are just like really busy playing the games and stuff, and they don't seem to be really like watching who's in the channel and asking, like when I say, oh, why did you do this? And that, obviously they're playing the game, but they don't go back, and then they don't like look at the comments and stuff, and they don't say, oh, this is what you should do and stuff like that. Like, I'm a total new player, so
you
know what I mean?
Are you talking about like streamers who don't interact with their audiences?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Like, I notice that you guys do a lot of the interactions and stuff, but when I go on to, like, a lot of the different channels and stuff, they're not actually interacting with the fans, or not, you know, saying, oh, by the way, you have people in your channel. They don't realize it.
I see.
So what's the question?
Okay, the question is, like, basically, what do you guys do? Like, do you have, like, a lot of interaction with a lot of new players? Like, do you encourage them to have like certain build orders? Like, do you do stuff like that in the channels and stuff, or do you just play the games and then you go, oh, this is what I did to succeed and stuff like that?
Gotcha.
You're just asking what we do when we stream?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I guess to benefit, like, new, he's saying I'm a newer player, You know, like, what sort of interaction would you do with me, a new player? Or maybe a better answer would be, like, is there anyone that I could watch that I could learn something from? Is that...
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Well, first of all, as far as, like, the stream chat comment is concerned, there's oftentimes, if you check a pretty popular stream, there's actually a lot of people asking a whole range of questions, and of course not every one of them is going to get answered, and sometimes not any of them are going to get answered. So it's kind of from the angle of what do I do when I stream. I answer questions if I have time or if I think it's interesting, but I've been streaming and playing this game for a very long time, so a lot of times people are like, "Yarn Control, why'd you pick Protoss?" And I won't answer that one anymore. Like, I'll just flat out ignore it, and then that person will tell me that they'll write, like, a Hey Stan letter about how that's all they really wanted to know, and I'm, like, really evil for not answering it. So I always encourage people in stream chats to try and have a little bit of empathy for the idea that their question might be really important to them, but maybe it's not to anybody else, so sometimes it doesn't get answered. But from the... Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Do you find that, like, when you're playing, like games like StarCraft or other games, do you choose them carefully when you're on Twitch and you're trying to figure out what might be easier to interact with the channel while I'm playing? Like, do you find that's, like, a hard choice to do, or do you just go and go ahead, like, to play the game kind of thing?
I think any streamer is probably, regardless of what their content is having some awareness on Twitch of their of their chat. I actually don't know of a single streamer who's like, fuck chat. I, like, will actually not look at it. So I'm not quite sure, because I'm pretty sure every streamer has consideration for that.
Yeah,
I don't think the game matters.
Yeah, you can totally tell I'm, like, new to Twitch and stuff, so that's why, you know, I'm asking these kind of questions and stuff. So.
Oh, right on. No, welcome to Twitch and all of the great content that you're going to inevitably consume. Don't get sucked in, man.
No, man. I'm just a total fan and just watch whatever, and I subscribe to Twitch, and, you know, I'm not going to broadcast or anything. I'm just, like, you know, I enjoy other people that enjoy the game, and that's what I like about Twitch. So.
Right on. Well, thank you for calling, man. Take care.
Okay, take it easy, guys. Take.
Jeff, you're really bringing out all the gold today. I don't know why you're laughing.
What do you mean, what gold?
I don't know. All the callers are great, man. Area code 847. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's that?
Hi. This is Mike from Chicago. And
what's up, Mike?
My question is, do you think that there are people in esports in general who use performance-enhancing drugs? I realize it sounds kind of funny, but in college it's generally accepted that people use study aids like Adderall, that sort of thing, to up their focus.
Yeah,
and I was just wondering if you thought maybe someone did that sort of thing before a big match, or if it even existed at all.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna hang up.
Happens. Yeah, thank you for your call. This is it's been happening since the beginning of competitive gaming. People have been taking Adderall or whatever. I've never really, it never concerned me on any level at all, because, like, if I was, like, a football player or this was a weightlifting competition and people were taking steroids, which gives them a gigantic and very, very literal advantage, then I would be up in arms about it a little bit more. But in StarCraft 2, like, if someone takes a pill to focus more, and it does help them, I don't know. I'll leave it to the people that make rules whether or not they want that as part of their competition, but it doesn't concern me that much because I don't see it as too terribly different from, like, I play a lot better when I drink Monster, so I drink Monster before I play.
Right.
Are we going to, you know, or someone's like, I have nerve issues, so I smoke a cigarette before I play. What, do we stop them from smoking a cigarette? I don't know. It doesn't bother me that much.
Zeno, how many performance-enhancing drugs do you take before a match?
Well, I usually go with the steroids.
I can tell.
You can pretty much tell by my physique, though, so.
Yeah.
You know, I think as, like, because we've talked about this before, and I know that I've said, like, even 6 years ago, I would have said it's not an issue, where, like, nowadays as more money comes into the scene, like, I could realistically see them moving towards some sort of a testing if it ever got bad or, you know, it was a big scan or whatnot. I'm just thinking instead I'm going to create a tournament where everyone is required to take drugs. You know, maybe some LSD, then we have a StarCraft tournament, and then – we find, and then it just won't be an issue anymore. Like, no one will ever have that concern about that particular tournament. One day, when I win the lottery.
I could see something like the International or these, you know, LOL World Championships where there's millions of dollars on the line and they're in person. Maybe they do a drug test before and want to crack down on that, but as far as, like, overall gaming, nah, we're not there yet. Not until Esports City is built.
Right, right. And I have to, I mean, I don't want anyone to think that we're taking the subject lightly because we have discussed it many times on Inside the Game, but I do feel like the general consensus is, like, this isn't an epidemic. There isn't an issue. Are there people out there that might be taking this or that? Like, absolutely. I mean, come on. Like, this is the world, right? This shit happens. Do I feel like it? Like you said, In Control, an issue that someone is actually winning? If someone won 9 tournaments in a row, just, you know, maybe we need to look into something here. But
yeah,
no, there haven't been any signs that have been like, this is a serious epidemic and we have to take care of this immediately. So I'm not sure that we should put all the focus on that when we really don't need to. Switzerland, the neutral party, wants to call in. We've got Zonalar on the line. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Oh, I'm live. Hello.
Hello.
Gentlemen.
How are you, gentlemen?
I'm doing fine here. 2 a.m. Switzerland. Nice.
Excellent.
So, my question is, what is the reason why are NA Koreans better than European Koreans? That's pretty much my question.
Okay, thank you. We'll answer it off air, because I think it probably has a pretty simple answer. I mean, it's just where they chose to play, right?
No, he's saying, why are they better? Why are the NA Koreans better than the European Koreans? Which is still kind of a weird question.
It is.
Because the answer is, in general, the North American Koreans have won more, and they've won bigger tournaments, and they're regarded as better. So,
NA Koreans probably take more drugs.
I can't tell if he's like being serious or not. It's like they're not North American Koreans. They're playing in the North American WCS region. Like, Koreans are Koreans. They're
from
Korea.
Well, I think we did say in the rankings that we would have put it Korea, NA, EU. So I think he was just like, you know, maybe the question was, let's save him here. Like, why wouldn't then some of the NA Koreans go to the EU?
Yes, okay, so that's the closest I think we can get to a good question. And the answer for that is because a lot of the Koreans chose North America because the connection from Korea to the North American server is a lot easier. So when they're qualifying online, they wanted the better connection to play from Korea. But also, at the beginning of WCS, European competition versus North American competition was very much so skewed in favor of Europeans. Like, there's better European players per capita than there is North American. So what happened was so many Koreans came to the same conclusion that they all went to North America to play against the easier North American players, but in eliminating the North American players, they left themselves with just a all-Korean competition, but they still have the better latency. So that's why you watch the European Koreans when they try to compete, sometimes they fail, but then end up winning anyways. Like, it took Stardust a few tries. It took DuckDuck a few attempts. And even when they did that, like, Genius, they all just, like, four-gated and cheesed every single game, which is kind of what they do anyways, but they especially do that when their latency is really bad. So that's why fewer Koreans have tried. The ones that did try also moved over there. So, like, MC, MMA moved for a while. I think MVP might have stayed for a... No, I think he always flew in. And then the Europeans are good enough to still stick around and not get pushed around by all of the Koreans. Although, while I say that, every single season there's been more Koreans, more Koreans, more Koreans, so maybe they'll have the same thing. It'll just take longer.
Also, since EG and TL are based in, or TL used to be based in NA, I feel like that played a pretty big role in having a lot of the TL and EG Korean players moving over to the WCS America originally.
Yep.
All right, let's keep them coming. We got Steven online. Steven, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I was just curious, with Valve's kind of success with the compendiums and now the, like, weapon cases with CSGO, Do you think we can see anything implemented on the Blizzard side of things that's similar? Because obviously it works well with free-to-play, like Dota 2, but CSGO is a pay-to-play game, and it also worked really well there. So I'm just curious if you guys think that that's maybe an option for the future.
I'll throw something out here. Like, I think that's an option. I think technically it's a harder option than people might realize for Blizzard. You know, I think that, like, StarCraft II was built with a very sort of, this is what I am built for, and this is what I'm going to do, and people are going to play me, and it could be competitive and this and that, but it wasn't really built to have all these microtransactions and all these other things. I mean, this is obviously something that Valve put a lot of time into in creating Dota, that Riot's trying to catch up with in League, you know, aside from what they already have in. You know, I've said many times, like, I am playing more games where they are free to play and I get daily rewards for logging in. Not like stupid stuff, like games like Soulforge where they'll give me like whole packs, or FPS games, they'll just give me like Warframes one, for instance. And now there's a lot of draw to that. I really believe that Blizzard can't technically put this stuff into the game the way that we really want it. I think that's probably one of the reasons why it's not just a, trust me, man, if they could rub a lamp and a fucking genie came out and he's like, wish one, I want fucking 1,000 naked girls. Wish two, I want $80 bazillion. And wish three, I want all this shit in StarCraft II. You know, maybe Blizzard would do that. But I don't think they can do that now. I do not think is technically they have a client to be able to do that. Xenocider, Jeff.
I think you got it.
Yeah. I think it's true that right now the StarCraft 2 is just really isn't focused on microtransition. But, like, if we were to pay some employees to think of ideas to make Blizzard a microtransaction game, like, I'm pretty sure that we could find ways to make it happen, you know? Like, if we were, like, offering something like $1 billion, like, find a way to make microtransactions work in StarCraft 2. I think that somebody would be able to find a viable way.
I mean, like, let's just for a second, right? Because we do this a lot as players, as fans, etc., is that we don't know, so we just kind of go, well, God, come on, how hard can it be to take my fucking money and give me capes for banelings? But, like, you have to change the UI. There is no system for microtransactions within the game. They're trying to deal with balance. They're trying to bring out Legacy of the Void. Like, where in the grand scheme of technical capabilities is it possible, unless you do have $5 billion? But I have this feeling that Blizzard's not just getting $5 billion to, you know, to do something like that. I really feel like this is only going to happen after Legacy of the Void is done, if it will happen at all.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, that's true.
Thanks. That's a great answer.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Have a good day.
All right, take care. I wish it was as easy as snapping fingers or rubbing a lamp. Unfortunately.
If we can...
Oh, yeah.
What?
I was just going to say, we can end about 10 minutes early if that's okay, too, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. We'll take a few more. We've still got a few more calls coming. We got area code 765. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi, how's it going? My name is Justin. I'm from Indiana. And I was a little hesitant to kind of ask this question because it's going to kind of sway off of StarCraft a little bit. But I'm hoping I don't sound like a complete idiot. But with Pokemon X and Y coming up, I just want to know, what's your favorite Pokemon? I'm sorry if it sounds stupid, but...
I think that's a fair question. I'm curious to know what In Control's favorite Pokemon is going to be. I have a favorite Pokemon. I've got to believe that Xenoslater has a favorite Pokemon. So, Xeno, you want to go first?
Dude, I never played Pokemon.
Oh,
that's
man.
Ridiculous.
Oh,
I agree with me. You're Asian. What do you mean you haven't played Pokemon?
You don't have to play the Pokemon game. You can just watch the anime as well.
There you go.
Yeah, of course you watch the anime. He's Asian. What's your favorite from the anime?
I never watched the Titanic, dude. I don't know what this is.
Don't compare Titanic to Pokemon.
Okay. Instead of Xenocider, Miniweek, come over here. Quick.
Basically the same thing.
Since Xenocider can't tell us what his favorite Pokemon is, why don't you tell him what his favorite Pokemon should be?
It should be Deoxys.
Deoxys. There you go. Xenocider's answer is Deoxys. Thanks, Mini. Appreciate that. Okay.
Damn. We'll ask him for mine, too. I don't know.
All right, Miniweek, come back here. Come back here.
Second favorite.
Jeff's favorite Pokemon should be what?
Snorlax.
I knew you were going to say that.
Snorlax. All right.
I think my definitely for sure would have to be Eevee because it's interesting because Eevee has so many evolutions. They're all so cool.
Man.
Except for that new fairy Pokemon.
Right.
That, I believe, is just dumb.
All right, Eevee is your favorite. That happens to be one of my kids' favorites. I'm a Bulbasaur fan myself. Thanks for calling. All right.
Whoa.
Jeff the Gold. Fucking Scrooge McDuck over here. Swimming through this gold, man.
Oh, my God. I'm trying to be more, you know, like in the past I've been kind of mean to these kind of calls. I'm trying to be like, you know what? This guy likes games, he's calling in, he's tuning in, he likes Pokemon a lot, he wants to know about these questions, who am I to judge? So I'm trying to take it down a notch.
I mean, imagine, right, a 9-year-old girl meets Justin Bieber. She's probably like, who's your favorite pony, Justin? You know, and like Justin's like, yeah, I don't watch pony, you know, like what is he, you can't let a fan down.
Yeah.
You got, I like all of them. How can I pick a favorite?
That's
You're
right.
The best, Justin. I love you so much.
Keep
Maybe
going.
Like One Direction. I don't know. Area code 516. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, cool. So my question is about WCS. What do you guys think about the fact that everything seems to be not teamly? So, like, you have, like, the GSL, but then GSTL is, like, on the side. You know what I mean? And then you have, you know, like, all your EG team leagues and your other team leagues are on the side. What about WCS main thing being a team league and how that would affect everything?
Actually, a question I don't think has ever been asked here on Inside the Game. Congratulations. You're the big winner. Well, aside from the Pokemon one. But WCS team league, feasible? Xenocider.
How'd that work?
I don't know. Instead of just being like, well, that can't work because of this or that, let's just say tomorrow they're like, yes, Team League. Are you excited? Do you think this won't work?
No, I'd be upset because they need to, and this is, there's, I'm not going to go through all the formality of making this sound less severe than it is. I don't mean any disrespect, but they need to get all their shit in order before they start expanding in this hypothetical future world. Like, WCS, as it is right now, is going to go through big changes because in its current form, it's not great. So if they were, like, tomorrow to be like, we have a team league, too, I'd be like, no, like, don't overburden yourselves. Just figure this out. Yeah. It's a little bit of a weird question because, like, some people do team leagues. And then the question to them would be like, how come you're not doing a 1v1 league? And they're like, because we went with the team league. What do you want? What kind of answer do you want? So, like, with WCS, it's like, nope, it's a 1v1 competition. Why isn't it a team league? Because they didn't choose to go that route.
Well, I was thinking more instead of, because like I don't know how true this would be, but maybe more casual players would enjoy getting around a whole team instead of getting around individual players. Like if someone's like, I'm an EG fan, you know, instead of like a Jadon fan. So then they're always following their team. You know, I have my team. I still like EG, even though if they Jadon retires or whatever, I still, you know, I like my team.
I love that thought and concept. It's a little, I would be concerned because what about, you know, what about teamless Jimmy? Right? Like, realistically, is teamless Jimmy going to make it to the WCS finals in its current form? Probably not, but you're alienating even more players by doing that. You know,
well, what about like your semi-pro teams, like your core gaming, your clarity gaming? Let's say there's like a challenger league for it, and they're in the challenger league, and it's like those type of leagues when you have your big dogs, like your Korean teams, your European teams, right, or whatever.
It's just it's just, again, I can't really get my head outside of this. Like, what you bring up would there's going to be problems, like Wheat was bringing up, but more in my opinion, importantly, like, they just chose the 1v1 route. So if we're talking about which is better, team league or 1v1, then we get into this weird discussion of like where Wheat's points become very relevant, where it's like, well, when would EG Net not ever be in Premier League? Like, what underdog team is going to come up and beat EG? Probably none. And it would be very stagnant because the teams with all the wealth would continue to get all the wealth. And then, yes, there'd be that like underdog story of one or two teams that crack up into there and it's really cool and everyone's really excited about it. But for the most part, no. So,
Zeno, any thoughts?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, it'd just be like you hire Korean mercenaries if you want. If like we completely replace the WCS and we just like focus completely on winning and stuff like that. So,
if everything was perfect in this StarCraft Utopia where WCS was just like amazing out of the gate and there is no problems with it, maybe that is actually a layer to put on top. But I'd have to say, like, it would be a hard pill to swallow to see it completely replace what they've got, especially with what Jeff said. It's kind of got to get the, you know, holding on to the reins and get back some control and all of it. But it's an interesting question.
Yeah,
you know, the only other thing I would throw out is that maybe the inclusion of a team league stops, you know, takes Team Story Cup, the EG Masters Cup, other team league initiatives that there currently are. And right now, you know, outside of WCS content is a thumbs up, and I would hate to affect that even more. So I would just throw that out there as like a final thought.
I actually agree with you guys a lot in what you're saying. I mean, I guess like single, more like old school MLGs, IPLs would pop up because they would need to fill that void. But I don't know. I see what you guys are saying.
You know what, though? Take the top two teams who scored WCS points over a season, fly them out to BlizzCon, have them play in a best-of-seven pro league knockout style, and I'd be fucking happy. That might not be the full team league, but, you know, there's actually a lot of stuff they could do if they want to create content around it, but that's a little far-fetched. Yeah. So. Anyway, thank you for your call, man. Appreciate
it. No problem.
Take care, man.
One of the concepts he touches on that I thought was interesting, and I actually talked about this with Apollo in Germany recently, and it's that the difference in games, like in StarCraft 2, it's very player-centric, so you follow your player. Like, if they go to a different team, most often you don't, like, well, I, you know, fuck that guy, I don't care about him anymore. No, you follow him to that team, whereas it's very different. In MOBAs, yes, you have your favorite players, but that's probably the second tier. You're probably, in general, more favorable to a team because it's a team game. So it's kind of it's a little bit interesting in just the difference in that way, but then how that affects tournaments and marketing. It's a lot more stable for the teams that people favor teams versus the players. And again, that's a byproduct of the fact that there's so much change around. But I thought that was an interesting discussion to be had, because what if, in a hypothetical different kind of world, StarCraft II tried to be more team-centric and tried to move in that direction?
Word. I did like what the guy had to say about rooting for a team, because we do see that happening over, like, there is something cool about that in, like, the Dota 2 and League landscape right now, because, of course, everyone has their favorite players, but there's, like, you know, they want to see that working as a collection. I understand, like, kind of wanting to have that same thing, and it doesn't exactly exist. I mean, it does, but it doesn't in StarCraft. You know, like, it's never a match where it's like, oh, man, X player make up for X player's mistakes, you know? Like, well, no, because it's a 1v1 format. So I don't know.
Right.
All right. I'm waiting for Goatless so we can wrap just a little bit early.
Yeah, I got to take my dogs out.
Did Suppy?
Yes, Suppy just won. His first one.
His first game.
Or his first set, or, yeah.
Is he playing Hwan Sin, do we know, next?
We don't know who he's playing next, no. Well, probably going to be Hwan Sin, but don't know.
Well, people in chat were talking about an All-Stars at Blizzard. You know, I'm sure the tournament's going to take long enough, but, you know, when you got all those great players out there, that would be cool to see a team All-Star thing.
Yeah, happen. They're doing a GSTL All-Stars.
That's like, you mean like a side event, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we got to go, Lest. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here to help us wrap up the show, as always, welcome to Inside the Game, Goat Lest. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, g'day, guys. How are we?
Awesome! Except Suppy's not here, but he just won his first game. So I guess
Yeah. Fucking, he did it, mate. He did. He fucking won it.
He did.
Yeah.
Any? How you been this week?
Oh, yeah, pretty good. Pretty good, mate. Things are heating up around here. Fucking summer's come early, mate. Fucking tearing
what?
In.
What? I love it. I love that it's getting cold as balls here. And
yeah, dude, it's fucking heating the fuck up. The humidity's through the fucking roof, and yeah, mate, just steaming it up.
You guys can keep that.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, mate.
Do you get triple
people,
digits?
People love it here, mate.
You get
triple digits.
Oh, wait, you're Celsius, aren't you?
You fucking bloody Fahrenheit, guys. Yeah. I'll just take a quick look. Fahrenheit to Celsius. Yeah. So we've been getting up to like what's it called? Here we go. About 97 degrees,
which
is pretty fucking high first fucking month of spring, you know?
I totally thought you were gonna be like 122 degrees, and I was gonna be like, fuck man. Your scorpions are big as dogs, and it's 120 degrees.
In September, though, you know, fucking...
yeah,
that's like you guys getting fucking that in March. That's, so, you know, pretty hectic.
Is it still September over there in Australia?
Oh, no, but I'm talking about, like, the last little while. Like, we were getting some fucked temperatures in September.
I had to say that because there's about 2 seconds where someone was wondering if I thought
that... We were breaking fucking records all over the place, eh? For hottest September temperatures.
Wow.
So, global warming, guys.
Yeah.
Al Gore, man.
It's a real thing, man. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
What's your question this week, Lust?
Yeah, I didn't really have much, so I just thought I'd ask you what you fellas think about Petraeus. I know he's a sheep shagger, but, I mean, he's really coming out there, and I did see him in a tournament... that I attended, you know, a good while ago now, probably 6-7 months ago, but he fucking tore ass through that bracket, and he absolutely devastated the thing, and he only, you know, he tore his group up, but, yeah, he had a good showing there, and, yeah, sort of made a fan out of me.
You guys got any thoughts? I've only seen him play once or twice, to be honest. I mean... Go ahead.
I heard from Katz or something that he in like most people think that Pig and Moonglade are the people that like dominate the Australian like local $100 tournaments or whatever the Australian local tournaments, and it's actually Petraeus who takes most.
Yeah, but that changed fairly recently, like in the last couple months.
Yeah, recently.
Before that, it was Pig and it was Mafia and Moonglade. Igaz would make some appearances in there as the lone non-Zerg. But lately, it's been Petraeus. He's got very good ZBZ. I think there's been a little bit of hype around him because he is doing really well in that Australian scene, and Australians have so much passion and such a great kind of self-sustained scene that whenever someone other than the usual suspects kind of pokes up there and starts doing really well, there's a lot of excitement because a lot of the people that are in the Australian scene, there's not like millions of them, but they're excited about StarCraft II, so they get the word out there pretty good. But also, he trains on the Korean server, from what I understand now. He used to train on the North American server, and he then changed to the Korean server. And I don't quote me on this, but I want to say he's GM on the Korean server as well, which will also get you some hype, because people regard that very highly, as they should. It's very hard to do. So as far as like ladder and local tournaments are concerned, he's very good, and he's fresh, and he's new, and he's young, too. That's worth mentioning as well. He's actually, I want to say, like 17 years old, if not a little bit younger.
Yeah, 17. I think he recently turned 17. Like he's
yeah.
Oh yeah, 17. Yeah.
So that's all the cool stuff, and certainly there's like a lot of potential there, which I'm always really excited about. Is it an unknown coming up and doing really well and kind of creating a name for themselves? not by being a giant jackass, but by being a pretty good player that people respect. So that's really cool. I guess I would be the unfortunate Grumple Stiltskin that would say, like, I'm excited for him, but I'm not calling him, like, top five foreigner or anything like that, because his accomplishments are extremely locked into Australia. Like, he's done very well there. He hasn't done much, if anything, abroad. And until then, that's when you really start to call someone amazing and really good. So, excited about him. He's really cool regionalistically. He's got a lot of potential because he's a young guy accomplishing good things on the ladder. But I'm not like, oh, yeah, yeah, Petraeus, oh, yeah, mate. Top five Zerg in the world, mate. Gonna do it. I don't think so.
Oh, well, he's a New Zealander, so. Why are you going on with all this bloody mate shit? I suppose they do. They do say a bit of that crap. But, yeah. It's interesting because, you know, haven't really seen much out of NZ either. I mean, we've had Moonglade and, you know, Pig and some guys busting out a little bit, but yeah, it's just a different part of the world to see coming out.
I've always loved the Australians. They had a great scene back in Brood War 2, man. Starbren, Reva, some of these other guys. They just had really good players, and they're always the friendliest, nicest people. And one of the cool things about them is not only are the players really cool, but they have like a micro community of just really excited and motivated people that they put on tournaments on a regular basis. Seeing all those guys at MLG this past... It wasn't this year, it was the year before, I think, when... what's his name? It's so embarrassing for his name. He's a really cool guy. Dev or something like that. Anyways, he sent like five guys to MLG, and they just had the time of their lives, and they're really cool, and they won some pretty cool games. So I'm always a pretty big fan of them. I guess that might even be part of the reason why I'm a little bit, when people are like, Petraeus is really good, I'm like, yeah, he's pretty good. I've actually played him a lot. Dox, thank you, Spikes. Dox, who I was talking about.
Yep.
Petraeus and I have played a lot of games, and he is a very, very big cranky pants, like all of the other Zerg, like all of his Zerg forefathers before him. So it was always funny, because like, he'd yell at me, and on stream I'd be like, man, this guy always rages. And then I get actually 10 tweets from people from the Australian scene that are like, hey, come on, like, he's a young guy, can you forgive him? He's not that bad. And I was like, whoa. I was like, wait, yeah, it's fine. Like, I'm not, he's still invited to my birthday party. It's just he's being a douchebag. But there's just people around the community in Australia that are very, like, very protective of their players, their up-and-comers. So he had a bit of a reputation for being a pretty cranky pants on the ladder. But the last few times I've played him, he's put that aside and seems to be focusing on playing, so that's cool.
All right. Goatlust, as always, thank you for your call.
All right. Thanks. Love you. Thanks Stay for cool. the answers, gentlemen.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Stay Fuck cool, yeah, mate. All right. Catch you later.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. That's Goatlust, ladies and gentlemen. What a great guy.
He is a great guy.
I love that guy. Good stuff. Xenocider, you want to start us off? For final thoughts,
follow me on my Twitter at EGZNORC, and you can wish me luck for IEF this coming weekend. I guess I'll be battling it out against some Koreans. Hopefully, show that what I'm made of. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I'll be streaming probably an all-nighter after inside the game. So.
An all-nighter?
I'll be watching all of his VODs so that I can beat him at IEF. So.
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll stop by. What about your Twitter? any new, like...
Yeah, where's your story?
I only got 2 hours of sleep last night, man.
So you can't come up with a story? Who said you could go all the way if you have 3,000 Twitter followers, right?
Exactly.
Yes. Yes. So your Twitter is EGZenoRC, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, well done. Glad I could see you there. In control.
Did you slap Zeno? That was the suppy laugh. You just did it, didn't you?
What did I do?
You went, ha-ha. That's the suppy laugh.
What?
God, you're transforming into suppy!
It's happening!
All right. For me, just a big shout out to everyone in this past weekend. With your guys' power combined, we were able to get my hair onto the top of Reddit overall, which, you know what? If that's
E-sports,
what we're going to have to do.
Esports, man. God, this is why I got into this right here, so that I could see Jeff's fucking hair at the top of Twitter, man. This is why I sacrificed time, effort, money, all of it.
Fair.
I can't stop clapping, actually, because...
So, yes. Clap. That was ridiculous. This coming week, like immediately after this, we're going to be doing a role play. That's our Dungeon and Dragon show. Wheat and I do another role play show that's Warhammer Dungeon Dragon, but we'll probably never do another episode because everyone's too busy.
Next week, man.
Hopefully.
It better happen, else I'm going to start sending out the Hitmans.
As far as for October, for me, I am slated to actually be at the Toronto Season 3 finals. I'll be doing PR for the documentary, the Rise of the Esport Hero, I think is what it's called now. It's the EG documentary. That premieres on the 26th of October in Canada on television. So if you're a Canadian, definitely watch that. It's going to be awesome. And more information about that will come out. But we're really excited about it. We spent an entire year with them filming us through the ups and downs of what it's like to be a pro gamer, and it mostly follows Idra, Huck, and myself, but everyone makes appearances there. I think Wheat's interviewed on it, Garfield, Sir Scoots, you know, everybody. So should be really cool. And I'll be streaming this week, so just check me out on Twitch at InControlTV. Follow me on Twitter if you haven't, at EGInControl. And like I just said, just a huge shout out to everyone who's been supporting me, really, really feeling the love these days, and I really, really do appreciate it. It makes my life really awesome and nice, so thank you guys.
Sorry, I was typing in chat as well. I had to finish my sentence, otherwise it wasn't going to come out right.
Yeah.
Guys, I want to say thank you to the responsible hosts that showed up to today's Inside the Game, episode 86. You know, Fuck Slasher is already a meme. I think Fuck Suppy is next on the list.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, congratulations on winning your challenger match, but we see what's more important, your career
now we know.
Over the show.
Now
we know. It's cool. No offense taken. We'll just know this for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, idiot.
So, Suppy, we miss you, and you better have watched Short Circuit next week.
Damn it.
Yeah, you better have. I'm done. We got Live on 3 tomorrow, which I'm happy to say is going to be, you know, maybe taking on a little bit different format. So we're going to be trying some new things out tomorrow, and I'm excited about that. I'll also be streaming, look at this, Beyond Two Souls tonight. And guess what? Apparently, games are better if they come in bulletproof tins. So
what is Beyond Two Souls?
Remember Heavy Rain?
And is it like that?
Indigo Prophecy? It's like that. But more importantly, I can actually put this into my breast here, get shot, and be okay in control. So nice. $60 also gets you apparently a fucking half of a Kevlar vest, even though it's just aluminum. I'll be streaming on twitch.tv/DGWE. Thank you for tuning in to Inside the Game. We'll be back next week, I believe. Yeah, we should be. And we got Live on 3 tomorrow. So thanks for tuning in, guys, and watching, supporting onemoregame.tv. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time. We're out of here, bitches. Peace.
Peace.
Peace. Peace.